Greetings, pals.
Greetings, pals.
Greetings, pals.
Welcome to the podcast, We're on the Power. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
My name's Tom.
And this is the podcast where we talk about movies, love it or hate it, we debate it. Mm-hmm.
Today
we
do. Sorry.
Today we're debating The Exorcist. 1973.
Ooh.
Yeah. We're going back in time.
What a fine year.
A fine year for film.
Skibbity-dee.
Directed by William Friedkin.
Friedkin?
Mm.
He's a freaking man.
You workshopped this with me on the phone, and I was like, I think you could do better, but you just,
Friedkin.
You just came in with it.
I just forgot what we talked about.
Say cool. Cool. Say whip.
William Friedkin.
And we rate films out of 11 on this podcast.
We do.
I don't know why. Can someone explain
Tom,
it to me?
Why don't you have a try?
I can give it a go. All right. It turns out I actually had to look this up because I'm not as familiar with... Are you guys Catholic? You're Protestant, aren't you?
Okay. No, and what the fuck?
I'm Protestant.
There are 10 commandments.
Sorry?
That's what you...
I'm Anglican.
Anglican, Protestant, whatever.
What's your angle in here?
Are you Catholic?
Whatever Hillsong is, I don't know.
You were Hillsong?
Yeah,
that makes so much sense. All right.
Shout to the Lord.
I had to look this up, but according to Catholic doctrine, you can actually masturbate with a crucifix 11 times before it's a sin. First 11 are free.
It's so...
And then once you get to the 12th one, then it's like, okay, now the devil's involved. But the first 11, it's okay.
For a very confronting film, you've brought up one of the good bits.
Figured we were going to have to get into
it. We're going to have to get... Anyway,
if you didn't know what this movie was, apologies to anyone
you're who's fucking
gotten
welcome
to this point and been like, I thought I clicked on Frozen. What the fuck?
So this is based on a novel, right?
Yeah, William Blatty.
Yeah, Blatty, Blatty, blah. So do we want to...
His name was William Peter, but then I just felt like, yada, 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 whatever.
He's written a lot of books, whatever. Do we want to do a quick synopsis?
Yeah, we do.
Let me tell you about this one. When a mysterious entity possesses a young girl, her mother seeks the help of two Catholic priests to save her life.
That's lovely. Okay.
That's all you need. That's all you need.
Straight
it's about an exorcism, actually.
Yes.
Oh.
Did you know? Hence.
The title.
The title. I chose this film.
You did.
What the heck?
I'm mad.
Yeah, don't say hell this episode. That would be too far.
No cursing. Because then we'll get possessed.
Yeah.
It's
an odd choice for
me. I was like, let's just risk it to get
punish
the biscuit.
Yourself,
I hated it.
Of course.
Shout your name if you like this film.
Tom.
Marcus.
Frank.
What?
I liked it. I liked it. It's a good film.
Oh, no.
I hated it.
Yeah.
I changed
but it's
my mind.
Really good.
Now I hate it. There's got to be something wrong with it, right?
No, I think that being 1973, it is a little dated, and I was able to give myself, there's a little bit of distance between some of the effects, and I was like, okay, it's not real. Okay, I'm all right. Like if I watch The Exorcism.
So that worked to your advantage.
To my advantage.
Yes. Yeah, okay.
I think too that you've gone in with extremely low expectations.
I was literally nervous pressing play. I was like, oh, and it was, I think I watched it at 10 a.m., sunny day, bright light.
You
I was like,
called me and even more so than usual, it felt like a conversation that was very bit heavy and stalling. Mm. And I was like, what are you putting off? And you're like, I'm going to watch The Exorcist.
Water bottle up his jumper. Yes. He's all cozy. And
drinking a glass of milk.
Yeah.
And then my Bible next to me.
Yes. Yeah.
Just in case.
Right. Not that you need it. You've got it all memorized.
Yeah, of course. Genesis chapter 1. God created the earth. The world has changed. Okay. I'm putting off this episode as well.
Do you want to give us a score?
Do you want to give us numbers?
Give us a score, Frank. Out of 11.
Like a 7.
Okay.
Solid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Straight down the middle.
Yeah.
Of liking it.
You want to go?
Can I guess yours, Tom?
Go ahead.
Tom's giving this a 9.8.
I'm not drinking the thing. You got is that correct?
It's a 10.
Whoa!
Pretty close. Pretty
I
close.
Really close. A round number. Okay.
Yeah, give me a
I'm
round.
An 8.1.
Yeah, 8.1.
8.1.
Yeah. Okay, so you don't like it much more than I do.
Yeah, but I'm not the surprise here. Like, I think mine's a pretty good score for a film dated back in, what is it?
73.
So it's what, 51 years old. Okay, directed by William Friedkin, starring famously Linda Blair.
I do believe it is Friedkin, by the way, but it doesn't freaking matter. It's fine, we can just go on.
It's definitely Friedkin. Hey, it's his freaking choice, man.
Yeah. You do what you gotta freaking do. Have you guys seen interviews with him?
No.
I want to open this with... If you guys did any reading about William Friedkin and the production of this movie, seems like not a cool guy, actually. No. Seems like a bit of a dickhead, not a particularly a friendly or thoughtful or considerate person. However, I cannot get past the fact that he has given some of the funniest fucking interviews ever and some of the funniest answers. He's like a proper New York doesn't give a fuck guy. So he was doing an interview a couple of years ago, and there's a viral clip of him being asked about Al Pacino, who he directed in, can't remember the movie he directed him. It was after the Exorcist. And the director, who's like an Italian guy or European guy, is like being very delicate and going like, I wanted to ask you about, I know you worked with Al Pacino, and it was a bit of a contentious set. And, you know, I just thought when I saw what Pacino said about your directing, and William Friedkin goes, I don't give a flying fuck into a rolling donut what Al Pacino thinks. Does that answer your question? And the guy's like, yes, it does. Thank you very much. He just says shit like that. He's like, I don't care at all. And he gives these brilliant like peeks behind the scene of how much he's like a straight down the middle, matter of fact guy. It sounds like sometimes to the detriment of the people working with him, he did cause a lot of problems. So
such as?
Ellen Burstyn and Linda Blair, who are the Chris and Regan McNeil in the film,
the mother and daughter,
both have permanent physical ailments during the shooting of this film. Ellen Burstyn was thrown in a harness or pulled in a harness much quicker than she was anticipating.
Against a wall.
And she broke or fractured her coccyx. And Linda Blair, when she was on...
that is the...
The
butt
bone. Sorry.
The what?
It's also the butt bone.
The butt bone.
The butt bone.
No, I'm just stuttering the word bone. Butt bone.
There is so much, like this film. Okay, we're going to obviously talk about the film.
Linda
there
Blair
is
was
so much around it.
Real quick, Linda Blair was on the bed when it was shaking in that big scene, and she apparently sprained her spinal cord or something got sprained quite badly. So like people
it's when she was being thrown up and down on the bed.
That might be it as
where
well.
Where her back was quite literally breaking.
Yes. There's some of the things they were
and
doing.
And the take left in the film is her screaming for them to stop.
Yeah.
It's not her being possessed. God. It's horrible and it changes everything.
I want to be clear. I am not a fan of William Friedkin, the person. I cannot get past how like entertaining I find his persona. But he is – it was a dickhead. He died last
say
year.
Say what you want though. He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Say what you want, but he made an incredible film because he was he had the creative freedom to do so. Now, it doesn't mean that everything he did was right and it doesn't fly. You just can't treat a set like that.
Well, no. It's like 1973, so of course
but
you can get away with it
it's
then.
It's kind of like maniacal and genius, you know what I mean?
Like, it's like the Anthony Hopkins, the who's the psycho?
Hitchcock.
Hitchcock. Yeah. It's that sort of thing, driving your actors to like to mania or like really push them to
and
the
it's a
actual
very,
limit.
It's a very 70s way of
Or Kubrick with his, although Kubrick is always a little bit outsized where people are like, oh, he was a taskmaster. He was like a Nazi. And it turns out people are like, no, you just did a lot of takes. You knew you were going to do a lot of takes. It was a lot of work, like David Fincher. Friedkin's the one where people are like, that guy was kind of a piece of shit. Like that guy was really hard to get along with and he didn't really care about the safety of the people and he should have.
They made you work, but at what capacity? You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think anything is anyone getting actually hurt is not worth a great movie.
No, but we've
got the great movie and here we are. So The Exorcist, fucking fantastic film. I watched it for the first time when I was maybe 15 or 16 and it scared the fucking shit out of me. I was so frightened. I didn't realize that a film that was so old could be so effective. I didn't realize there were things in the film that I just didn't know were possible in a movie. Like, and this was in an era...
Like for me, what I found so harrowing about it is this. Regan is such a nice, you know, she's a fun kid. It's sort of the way it progresses. You are I'm so terrified for her.
Yeah.
For the actual character dying, I'm like, get the demon out of her, please. I'm just praying. Oh, I'm praying for
you're
it.
Watching,
oh my
you're
God.
Watching every cut every.
And the makeup gets worse and worse, and she got cuts around her lips, and
she's just degrading to a point where you're like, "This is horrifying."
It's so well done,
And it's clever because every scene you see her, you're seeing just a slight progression.
Yep.
Did you have anxiety when you first met her? Because I assume you knew a young girl gets possessed, going into this.
So I've seen Scary Movie. We were talking about this.
When you first meet Linda Blair in the movie,
yep.
Did you go, "Oh no"? Like, was that your... Yeah, because that's my... Having not seen it for years, but I watched it a bunch as a teenager, watching it again today after like 10 years, I was like, oh, I'm so fucking bummed out for where this is. Like, I'm in. Yeah. But immediately I'm like, this little girl is so lovely and I don't want this to happen
to
her.
Can I ask, did you find... something that I really love about this film, aside from the very obvious stuff, is how natural and grounded the conversational dialogue is between the actors.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that opening scene with her and her mother at the dining table. She's talking about, can I get a horse?
Yeah.
It's a really nice scene.
And the bit where she steals the food and she runs out into the hallway and they like to have a little wrestle.
And it's so endearing and it's really, it's real. It feels very lived in for what is a surprisingly in a 70s film.
Yeah, back in the day that didn't really happen.
Yeah.
And there's such an undercurrent. I don't know if I just felt this because I was like waiting for something to explode early on. It builds so slowly, but there's an undercurrent of like, what's happening? Is the demon already here?
Yeah.
And you see little flashes and when and how. And
Boy,
It just makes me shiver.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yuck. Now, why did they do this?
I will say, I want to score this film higher. I'm already just going to get into it now, but I think the opening of the whole film is so pointless. I could just do without.
Of the Exorcist man
in Iraq.
Yeah, he's
digging up bones. A real digging site out there. I kind of just get rid of it. I don't really need, now, even though I've seen this film countless times now, I don't need it. It doesn't add once every 2 years.
Okay, cool.
Don't think it adds anything to me and for me. And
I think you could. I agree, but I think I like the scene where he climbs the hill and looks at the demon statue. Mm-hmm. That's cool, but it could be shorter.
Kinda, but it doesn't explain anything and it doesn't add to the lore.
I thought you were talking about the serpent penis on the statue. And I was just going, how much shorter would you say?
I don't know.
That much shorter?
About there?
Okay.
Yeah, for the listener, about there.
Okay. It's alluding to a whole bunch at the start of the film, but it doesn't really give it any sort of payoff and it doesn't really help.
It'd be great if you saw him do, I don't know, like, because you assume, looking back, that he has seen such horrors that he has to get away from that and then he sees Satan again in that statue because he's been face-to-face with Satan that many times.
I guess so. I find him to be kind of unimportant too. Like, I'm far more interested in
the young priest.
Dimmy, the young priest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Jason Miller.
And
Jason
Miller. It's crucial that you obviously get his background and a bit of context to him prior to visiting, right?
Yeah.
I think that's very important.
Yeah.
And I think that they flesh that out enough that it pays off for me.
Yeah.
Even when the older priest comes in and the aging makeup on him, which is hilarious, by the way.
You don't think it's good?
I think for the time it's really good.
I think now it holds up. I think someone who's never seen this movie and they'd be like, that's probably a guy in like his 60s who they've done up a little bit. And it's like he's like 40 years old.
Yeah, when you know
like
how young
he's
he
so young
is.
In this.
Yeah, but the makeup's not good.
I don't think that's true.
It's pretty caked. I don't know.
I think there's some scenes where because of just the transfer that happens now where you get 1080 and 4K, you're like, oh, we're seeing things you really couldn't have seen.
Yeah, that's
then.
Fair.
But I still think, I always look at it and go, it just looks like Max von Sydow is just like 70. It just looks, he looks how he then looked 30 years later. Mm. They basically just nailed it.
But I don't think we needed him.
I agree with you that when that scene's happening, I go, this is like table setting. It's not particularly fun. And once he shows up, I think you needed it. I think you did need him staring down a Pazuzu statue in the middle of Iraq while the sun is setting, just kind of contemplating the metaphysical good and evil
and
of the world.
And dogs are fighting over here.
Oh,
like, there's
my
evil,
God, that shot is so upsetting.
There's evil in the air
amongst
is what you
others,
feel.
But yes.
It's
like-
so many others. But yes, just you're so right. Yeah. The second it cuts to the shot of those dogs and the snarling, I'm just like, that is such an effective way of going, like, there's something wrong here.
Now, the white-faced demon, I don't know if you took the moment to pause on it.
No, of course not. Why would I pause on that?
Have you paused on it and actually looked at
no.
it?
No.
It's kind of silly.
Well, it is because it's only there for a frame,
yeah,
right, or a couple of frames.
But I don't know. It's never sat right with me either.
Oh, it worked for me.
Yeah,
did it
freaks me the fuck out every time.
Does it?
Every time. I'm just like,
I think because I've seen it done to death now, that sort of imagery, that like the flash, like, did you see it? Didn't you see it? Like, did you catch that?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that it doesn't have that hold on me anymore. So going back and watching it now, I can't rightly remember my first watch of this film and I don't remember it impacting me. Maybe I missed it.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
But
do you think this film, it's laying the groundwork for horror films for the next 50 years.
This is it, like culturally.
Culture's the most important.
When I was growing up, like 7 or 8, and I kind of started to understand, oh, there was this whole world of culture and things that existed before me.
Mm.
And I remember every time I would ask an adult or someone 10, 15 years older than me, what's the scariest movie ever? They said The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, it was always The Exorcist. Mm. I never heard another answer. The Sixth Sense kind of came along and people were like, that's a great twist. And that is creepy, but always, every single person. So by the time I was old enough to watch it, I was like, I have to watch The Exorcist. Mm, it's all anyone says. And it didn't disappoint. Like, it freaked me out.
What version did you guys watch? You know there's 2 versions?
Yeah, there's the original version that cuts. Well, if you saw the one with the
stairs,
the desert, you saw the one with her coming down the stairs, back to the spider walk, and you saw the ending where the priest and the detective go to the movie together.
No, didn't see the priest.
As in, like, at the end, he's like...
Do you want to go see the movie? Oh, yeah,
do you want to go see
it.
The movie? That's what I mean. That shot. So there were like 12 minutes cut from the original cinematic version in 73, and those scenes were all cut.
Why?
So
the stairs, I know why. The others, I don't.
The stairs, he just didn't think worked.
No, and because I think the stunties that did the scene couldn't do it safely without wires, and therefore the wires to him were too visible. I can see wires. I think the shot is shit. Get rid of it.
This has been disputed because the person who did it then came out and said, I'm a trained gymnast. They didn't use wires.
Interesting.
So it's this whole thing where half the crew, it's so funny when even only a scant 50 years go by and people cannot agree on the story.
Mm.
But some people say it was the harness was in the shot and some people say he just didn't like the look of it. And it's kind of, no one really knows which, but regardless, when it's put in, that is one of the most effective moments in the film. I couldn't imagine the movie without it.
Name the 2 most famous scenes in the film, I think, would be the spider walk down the stairs and her head turning.
Yeah.
Twice, in fact.
I think the most, like, the spider walk's scary, but then it sort of cuts to nothing. You're like, okay, what just happened? Which, I don't know, leaves a feeling of unsettledness, but I think the scariest bit is the bed shaking. And her, Linda Blair is fantastic in this.
It's one of the best performances.
Oh, my God. Yeah, see, the bed shaking to me doesn't.
The shake where she's being thrown.
Do you mean when she's...
Oh, yes. When the bed itself is doing this stuff,
yeah,
whatever, when she's being visibly thrown up and down onto the bed like she's being ragdolled, which she is, that's upsetting. And then knowing the background adds a layer. Yeah.
That's the moment where my, like, troll modern brain comes the closest to laughing. When they walk in and she's, like, sitting up and sitting back down really quickly. And for a second, part of my brain goes... Like, it does look a little silly, and then just the effect of the whole scene kicks in. I'm like, no, this is still terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's, if I was watching that with a teenager today, I could imagine them laughing.
Now,
and like, that looks stupid. And I'd be like, yeah, sure.
It doesn't, because it looks real.
I agree. Painful, I get how that moment sort of like
twigs. It's hard to compare, but The Conjuring 2, which was only back in one of the last 10 years, right? Does a lot of bed shaking scenes in a very similar respect.
Mm.
Does it 10,000 times better and far more effective, and it is spine chilling.
Isn't that a sex scene though?
Patrick Wilson, hello.
The conjugal?
The conjuring?
I'll let you finish.
Continue.
What do we
continue?
Think?
That is the word.
No. Moving on.
Continue.
I think something that you pointed out, Frank, that's really effective in this movie is the timeline is very uncertain.
Yeah.
A scene will happen and then you see Ellen Burstyn, who's fucking amazing in this.
So good.
And you're like, I don't know if it's been a week. I don't know if it's been a month. I don't know how long it's been. And
you're just worried. The whole time you're just like,
well, it's scarier to think it's been shorter. It's scarier to think it's been a couple of days and she looks harrowing. She looks now, like she's not slept.
No, see, I find it worse if it's been longer because I imagine Ellen Burstyn is going to these doctors, right? That's the whole process. She's going to doctors, to scientists, getting all these tests done and they can't figure it out and she starts losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that whole unraveling and that's what you love to see. In my mind, it had been maybe 2 months, 3 months, that sort of period of time.
Mm.
Oh,
do you want some... Because I've seen this film 100 times, I ended up doing a lot more looking back on the background and everything like that. But do you know much about the radiologist scene?
The angiography where they go in through her neck.
That's horrific, by the way. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, do you know the radiographer's assistant, have you heard about him?
No.
He murdered someone.
Paul Bateson, his name is, and he's a serial killer.
Yeah, that's right.
And at the time of filming this, had murdered, supposedly murdered, quite a few people.
Yeah.
Admittedly murdered and was put away for it. What? But they could never find the bodies.
I'll read up
on it because he's mentioned in Mind. He's got a character in Mindhunter, I think.
Sure.
He's got. They made the same director, Friedkin, made a film about him.
I didn't know that. That's crazy. I knew that. I've spent a lot of time reading about like the cursed nature of this film, and we could get into that a little bit later if we want, like Butler's Pantry style. But there's so much that was happening at the time to do with the production and like the length of it and how it resulted in so many different people getting injuries and people associated with the shoot dying or getting grievously injured. It was a lot going on at the time.
I think we can go into the pantry. But, like, what else are we going to say? It's terrifying and it's so well made.
Well, I want to talk a tiny bit about...
I'm happy to move on, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I didn't pick up on the social cue there, but you gripped me really hard.
It's so funny you liked this, though.
Yeah, it's good. It's good filmmaking.
I want to talk about the things that still didn't work in a moment for you, because it's still a 7, so obviously there are things that maybe you're like, oh, I wish this could have worked, this could have. But, like, the thing that I was very surprised to find now is that if you'd asked me... I watched it this morning. And I saw it maybe 5 or 6 times as a teenager. And if you asked me, what are the 5 scariest or most upsetting moments in the movie? I'd have gone, oh, yeah, the crucifix. Her head going backwards.
Yeah.
Her making her mother, like, lick her, you know, all these awful things, yelling at the people.
And sorry to interrupt, but the obscenity she yells seems so out of time, seemed like you'd hear them this, like, in this day and age.
Yes.
So hearing that in the 70s?
That's what shocked me as a teenager. Crap. I was like, I'm watching an old movie, and then the doctor says, she said for me to get away from her fucking cunt.
Yeah.
And I was like,
you don't have to say it here.
Well, we can bleep it. And then I was just... I remember at 15 being like, that's not allowed.
Yeah,
this movie is old. They can't say those things.
I agree.
And of course, I still agree. It was a few years after the Hays Code had collapsed and Bonnie and Clyde and The Godfather was the year before this. So a lot of movies had come out that suddenly were a lot more graphic and a lot more sexually sort of
charged.
Sexually charged. The scene that upsets people so much, and it actually upset me this time, and I was like, I don't know how I dealt with this when I first watched it, was the angiography.
Yeah.
With the. I watched it today and I was like, needle how did I forget about this? This is so upsetting.
The needle is so big and thick and then you're seeing them aim for the hole and just going, oh, I think I've gotcha, bang, just popping it in this hole and then the blood and then
run a thread through and you're like, no, stop what you're doing.
And the casual nature of all this blood's just pulsing out and they're like, here we go. They've had actual
people in the field watch the film and say it's the most realistic depiction of that in the film they've ever seen.
And it's crazy that in a movie with demonic possession and projectile vomiting and crucifix masturbation,
broken necks,
all these terrible, horrific things and lacerations, and people came out and were like, the surgery scene was the worst. Like and some that, people truly are like, that's the worst thing I've ever seen.
At the time, during the watch, supposedly that was the most confronting thing.
People would pass out, people would leave.
Yeah.
The most, I think, terrifying moment for me was when the young priest walks back in after taking a break and the old priest is dead.
Mm.
And I was like, oh no, they're going to lose. Oh no, the demon's going to win.
What's crazy is that he just dives on her and just starts laying into her.
Yeah. It's like, because not that's what, we're talking about that's the very what end you of the want, film but they're here, like, because the old priest is like, you have to like remain composed and don't let them get you. And he's like,
fuck this.
Hey, mate.
Prison rules, bitch.
So good.
And yet we're talking about it now and it's hard not to find it funny. Yeah. And in the moment you're like, I'm totally locked in.
Totally horrified.
I'm so scared for that man and what's going on. The fact that when he walks in, she's sitting with her arm up on the bed set or the actual the banister and she's just looking casually, almost a little surprised. Like she doesn't really know what's going on. It's so creepy.
Mm.
She just doesn't acknowledge it, and then she starts giggling and you're like,
and
this
you're just
is
waiting. You're just waiting.
Horrifying.
I don't like it.
So many single shots in the film that have nothing to do with the possession, specifically with Regan, are very upsetting. The dreams that Dimmy has of his mum, where she's at the subway calling out to him, and he can't hear her, and then she goes back down, and then when he goes back in the room, like you said, and she's just sitting up in bed, pale white, staring at him. So upsetting, like
he lays into her and does the haymaker, and then he goes, "Take me, come into me," and you're like, "Don't, like that's not going to work." And then it's just going to be bad. But then jumps out the window or he's thrown out the window.
I think my take is jump.
He jumps.
He jumps. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
But question mark, it's over because that can't kill a demon. But it's well, and it's demon, like, obviously
it's like a parasite in the host,
I
kind of right?
like that though. I really like the film doesn't allude to more than he's out the window, he's dead, therefore we now don't know anything else. And it doesn't do this mysterious like someone in the distance, well, their this eyes
is what
start glowing.
This is what I thought that then the lieutenant who comes in afterwards like, hey, you want to watch a film? I was like, that's Satan. He's Satan.
Oh, now the lieutenant's.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so that's. I think that's how.
Because I was like, why is that scene there? Why is he saying the same dialogue as he did to the other priest?
I think the reason Batty wanted it in there anyway, why he wanted it in the film and he was upset it got cut is he's like, I ultimately was seeking to write a book about good triumphing, even if not in obvious ways, over evil. Little incremental steps of goodness and virtue can push back the darkness and like defeat the tide of evil. And just those guys at the end being like, let's go get lunch. It's like, thank God it ends on like a nice kind of cute upbeat
no,
thing.
No, it feels creepy. A little because why is it the exact same dialogue?
Well, it's not. He's not in the original. Yeah, he says Othello with Groucho Marx, and in this one he says Wuthering Heights.
Yeah,
I've seen so it. Different. Another one. Yeah. I think it's cute. It's almost like a little like for snappy
me,
comedy.
For me, it feels like I'm trying a tactic, and this is and I'm going to kill you. Like I don't know. It felt something like that.
Interesting.
But maybe that's just me because that's what happens in horror films: is the demon always carries on, right? Like we know that's sort of like.
I've always interpreted it as Jason Miller's sacrifice. He affirms his faith. Again, in the moment, especially when he's like going through the exorcism with Max von Sydow.
Yeah.
And then when he takes the demon into him and instead of attacking Regan, he jumps out the window. It absolutely wrecks me. I had a very emotional reaction to it today that I never had when I was younger.
Really?
Especially when father.
Oh, did you watch it today?
I watched it this morning. And when he was lying there out the window, I was like, this is really getting to me. And when Father Dyer came and said, do you want to make your last confession? I just started bawling. I was like, this is so upsetting.
The moment that got me is just before that. So he's just jumped out the window and then Ellen Burstyn comes in and grabs her, but she's not sure. She goes to Regan and she's like, and it's hesitant and it's so devastating. Because you imagine your child. Oh.
Now she...
I imagined this would be quite a difficult watch for you, Frank, for that reason. But yes, the idea of your child just...
And you can't do anything.
You can't help him. Yes, when Regan's crying and she finally goes to her. And then another bit that really I found very stirring is when they're leaving finally at the end and Regan sees the priest's collar and she doesn't know why, but she leans forward and kisses him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so upsetting. That's so beautiful.
She doesn't remember it.
She has no idea. It's really, it's a gorgeous film.
Mm.
It's very understated despite being horrific.
It's gruesome, so enormous
but
as well.
Yet there's so much of it that, like you say, Marcus, in just quiet moments of dialogue, very, very naturalistic exchanges between people.
Ah, sorry, quiet dialogue, which she pees on the carpet and then she goes, you're going to die up there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And, but then.
Now, was that to the director? Who does she say that to?
She says it. What do you mean?
Well, he's a.
Oh, she says it to everyone at the party. No, the director's left at that point because he got drunk. But she's just saying it to everyone.
You're
going to die up there. I guess it's kind of meant to be a threat to Ellen, right? Or meant to be a threat to her mum that you're going to come up and I'm going to kill you because I'm the devil.
Yeah.
But it's not only how horrifying that is, it's when she's bathing her and she's like, darling, why did you say that? Do you know why you said that? And she just can't get a response out of her.
Mm.
And when she puts her to bed that one time and she says, Mum, what's wrong with me? This is so sad. It's so devastating. It's
so devastating. And also there's that undercurrent like we've spoken about. She's bathing her. It's so vulnerable. And you're like, you're going to get attacked. You're going to get murdered.
Mm.
Like how can you stay this close to this level of evil? Of course she can. It's her child.
Yeah.
Oh,
I looked into.
Fuck this film.
I looked.
I see why it's just a 7.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
I get it.
I looked into the how they filmed a lot of it as well.
Yeah,
and they've got like found footage of someone filming the director going through certain takes. So I don't know if you recall, it's a very vague scene, but it's when the babysitter and a whole bunch of other people are going up the stairs to go and visit her in her room again, and it's like a tracking shot coming up the stairs and into the bedroom. It's a really interesting shot. You might have to go back and look, but Flick had already seen this and she said, do you know how they shot that? I was like, now I'm thinking about it. And I was like, well, the camera doesn't seem that steady, but it doesn't seem like they're kind of walking backwards up the stairs because they kind of – the camera's sitting at a point where you physically can't. Like, it's almost like it's going through walls. It's crazy.
I know. Yeah, what you mean.
Yes. And so it turns out it's a set, right? So it's an open roof. It's a set, and he's the director with the camera. Is in this sling, this harness, floating, and they're basically pulling him around, and he's just free floating around the set, filming it in real time.
Really?
It's an incredible shot. And you look at that, and you go, "This is 73. He was ahead of his time."
Yeah,
that's cool.
Ahead of his time.
Wait, does that mean he was DOP as well?
No. He had a DOP that worked with him on French Connection.
Yeah.
But he would have, whoever was in the sling.
Also French Connection.
Yeah. I mean, this is, and he's coming off of that because he won Best Director and Best Picture for that a few years earlier. Yeah. So that's basically why he got to make this.
This has a lot going for it. Now, sorry, my ignorance. The mother, what's her, the actress?
Ellen Burstyn.
She's, Burstyn
with talent.
Yeah. I can only properly recall seeing her in two things. It's this.
Requiem.
And Requiem.
Yeah. Those are
Requiem
my big references.
Requiem is so upsetting as well. She's like a good trauma actress.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
She doesn't take easy roles, I don't think. And she feels very
old Murph in Interstellar.
Yeah, I was about to say she's in Interstellar. She's in the bed at the end, and that's very upsetting.
She's good. And I'm talking about best cries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She plays someone who has been conditioned to live a life that is more domestic and more sort of suburban and regular and yet is brimming with some dark energy. And that's in The Exorcist, and it's there in Requiem, where she's become this woman who her life has not become the way she wanted it to, and she's taking these steps to, she thinks, improve it, and it is eroding her sanity. And watching her in Requiem is one of the most upsetting things you'll ever see. But watching her in this is, you know, she's electric. She's fantastic in this film, and she's so comforting and nurturing, and yet so she's such a frayed nerve.
Broken
as well.
And frayed nerve's great. She's also Barbara Bush in W.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I haven't seen that movie.
Talk about
a broken
woman.
In so long. Wow. But, yeah.
And Josh Brolin.
Now, the music as well, we haven't talked about because the music is.
It's because it's barely in it. It's great. No. But there's like 17 minutes of score in this film, and it's incredible.
When it does.
Tubular Bells, which is by, I want to say, is it Mike O'Brien? It's Mike someone, and it's that classic theme that we really only hear properly when she's walking down the streets of Georgetown. And it sounds incredible.
Do you know it's funny because it sounds so similar to the Halloween.
Yeah, which was like maybe
piano.
5 years after this. I think 78 would have been Halloween. So it's John Carpenter-esque very much.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's so darkly pretty too. It's
every horror film that came after this is basically just like, I saw The Exorcist. It made horror prestige. Yeah. It made it more refined. It gave it a place in the cultural conversation that it didn't seem was possible.
Yeah.
You don't get Silence of the Lambs if you don't have this movie.
No.
You know, there's such a similarity between the weird suburban sort of like evil brooding beneath the surface. The shot design, the composition, the claustrophobic emotion of it all is so much there. In Fincher, it's Seven, right? You wouldn't have Seven if you didn't have this movie. So much of that stuff as well. I love this film.
The demon, again, I should have done the research properly, but the demon is supposed to be some Pazuzu. Ancient... Yeah, and is it like Demon of the Wind or something like that?
I can't remember if it's a Mesopotamian or it's like a demon of some sort of like, you know, culture from antiquity. But it is, it might be a wind demon. It might be, it's like the way it looks in that statue, that chimeric thing where it's got like a serpent penis and it's got like a dog head and a man's body or whatever. And it is just, I think, meant to be a reference to the idea that there are... Hey, what's up?
I'm just over here. I'm just scared.
Viscerally upset. Can I just say, it is the horniest demon ever.
This movie is
that giant penis that wraps around his leg.
Exactly what Frank said. It's so sexually charged in a way that would have been so confronting. I think that this movie... Should we get into the Butler's Pantry?
Sure.
The Butler in a pantry with a mic.
Again?
The Butler's Pantry.
I swear we
did that last episode.
No, I swear we've already done this.
We should get into the cursed nature of the filming. But the thing I guess I want to say the most is this film was a phenomenon that has been seen maybe like, I don't know, 10 times in film history. Like it's very difficult to pinpoint many other films that had the impact this movie did. It made so much goddamn money. You know, it's really hard to do adjusted for inflation on an international level because obviously different currencies and different indexing and stuff like this.
Don't be a coward.
But it made like $450 million, like, you know, and which to this day it would just be in the billions. Like it is one of the highest grossing American domestic films of all time.
Yeah.
it was a stupidly successful word of mouth film. And the producers, you know, Warner Brothers didn't think it was going to be that big.
Lifetime gross was 660, actually.
660, but is that adjusted?
No.
Yeah, I think that. So it's like just billions and billions. Huge, if we're just talking about how much money this movie has made.
And cheap, right?
Say again.
Fairly cheap to make.
Well, it went over budget a lot. Like it was cheap. You know, when you look at it now, you're like, oh, only 14 million. It's like, yeah, but that would have been like 70 million in '70s. And I think that's still mid budget.
That's mid budget.
But I think, well, it's before the blockbuster era when they didn't really.
Yeah, Jaws hadn't come out.
It was 2 years before Jaws, right? So this movie was so many things at once. It was so much body horror. It was so much over sexualization. It was so much American sort of a reflection or a dark mirror of what is going on in America with Vietnam, what is going on with the countercultural movement. Are things not improving like the promise of the 60s was trying to guarantee people? Mm-hmm. And so much of that packed into one package. I think if just it had been one of those things a lot, people would have rejected it. But it was so much, people were like, this is fucking undeniable. This is a cultural force. There's no way to get past it. And it established touchstones for horror and for cinema in general that have yet to be paralleled in many ways. And you could talk about Scary Movie 2 like you do, like the James.
Like I always do.
Like you always do. It's hard to stop you with the James Woods performance and the Andy Richter.
Andy Richter.
Yeah.
Your mother's in here. Mom, would you get out of there?
Would you get out of there?
I was like, surely those are all jokes. And I realized that a lot of that's like taken verbatim from the script of this.
Yes. Natasha Lyonne pissing on the floor.
The messed up stuff that the possessed kid does. I was like, that's all jokes for the movie, for Scary Movie, right? Yes. No, that's all like real.
The stuff they don't take is the stuff that I bet they were just in a boardroom or they were in a writer's room for a week trying to work out. They're like, there's no way to make masturbation with a crucifix funny. We can't do it. It's too brutal. We're dropping it,
right? You've got 50 jokes in there that you could take.
The vomit and the head spinning and all that. But even with that stuff, you watch it and you're like, it is not diluted at all. I do not watch this movie and start laughing. I'm just petrified the whole time
it's amazing that with such... It's been so parodied, it's so, you know, known now, and it's so dated that it still holds up to this level.
I think it's pretty incredible.
I'm quite desensitized nowadays. I mean, I had an overly active imagination as a kid growing up, so horrors to me were not, they just didn't work.
Because your life was a horror?
Then something, is that what you're saying? And then something happened, something twisted in me where it's like, then I accepted it and I couldn't get enough of it. Now I watch a film like this and I'm not affected by it. In the same way that you both are talking about it, I don't feel the tension necessarily. The only in the last couple of, you know, maybe decade, a film that's made me feel like that was the first Conjuring film.
Yeah.
And it had been a long while since something
Would you say throat. Actually scared or just like, ooh, this is tense and
genuinely
fun.
Like heart in throat, like tensing the seat, like regulating my breathing sort of. Terrified of watching. I was like, this is great. I've missed this feeling.
Hereditary didn't do that for you?
No, it didn't.
It did that for me.
But I had to turn the film off and process for, I kid you not, a week when her head comes off.
Yeah, that's one of the most...
Yeah, we didn't hear from you from that week.
Confronting scenes in cinema, I think I've
both
seen.
Both times a head comes off in that movie, actually.
It's yeah, not the second time, not so much. Anyway, we're talking about her.
Yeah, sorry. We're talking about...
Anyway, but I miss that feeling and I love hearing you both. Tom, you over-exaggerate anything anyway. I know that Frank...
People just don't understand that I'm full of emotions and I have nowhere to put them. No. Movies are all I've got. But I do feel that way. The way you're describing with like heart in my throat, when she's going, every time Regan screams and Ellen Burstyn runs up the stairs, I'm like, don't fucking go in there. Like, don't go in there. It's going to be horrible in there. And it's always horrible.
No, but she has to go in there.
She has to, but I like, have go. That feeling of I'm just I can't
why
go
don't,
into
you
that
don't want her to be
I can't
screaming.
Go into that room again.
You just want it to be over.
I just,
Nominated for 10 Oscars.
Yes.
It won two of them.
Did sound it? And screenplay, right?
Yeah.
Which
is not like... Makeup or
adapted script?
I don't know if they had makeup category there.
See, that's crazy.
They did
art direction.
They basically
direction.
Introduced makeup because of An American Werewolf in London. They were like, we can't keep ignoring shit. Like Rick Baker's out here making this incredible shit. I've never seen it.
Oh, really?
But
well,
I should
watch it.
But they introduced it for that. But
ahead
yes,
of time.
Like you were saying, Frank. What were some of the other ones?
What?
some of the other nominations.
Nominations?
Yes.
I can't read. Don't worry about
picture,
it.
Picture, director, actress, actor. Supporting actress, supporting
you
actor.
You want to say it or me to say it?
Yeah, well, no, you said you can't read.
You
buddy.
Opted out.
I know, right? You definitely made that call. Regardless, I would have given it to Linda Blair. I think this is one of my favorite performances.
And that's controversial, right? Because they didn't want to. Why didn't they want to? There was a reason they were like, well, we can't give it to her because.
I think there were a handful of things.
What Marcus is
MVP.
Spelling.
Let's do MVP. Well, we're going to do that.
Well, just before we get into MVP, just because the Oscars and the curse stuff, there was some issues with, one, it's not her voice when it's...
when you're doing the voice.
That's Mercedes. There's a very, very well-known actress from the time. And then also Ellen Dietz is her stunt double, who apparently, or buddy double, who apparently is in it for like 17 seconds.
So wait, that's a female doing the dub.
Yes.
It's not a male.
Who... Getting into the pantry, the woman doing the dub chain smoked, drank whiskey, and was strapped to a chair to record it. And like William Friedkin was like, "Yeah, I'm putting you in like manacles, and I'm like making you frightened for your life to get this." Again, not a cool dude.
Didn't need to.
Really fucking weird that he did shit like that.
It's like,
but that's what they ended
up. It's
the
Laurence Olivier thing. My dear boy, have you tried?
Have you tried acting?
Just let them act.
There's a scene where Demi's at the table and he's startled by the phone ringing.
Oh, you
know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Do you know the background on that one? Freakin' fires a gun.
Yes, I have heard.
Oh yeah, he was firing guns on set. He told him that
natural reaction, and Demi lost his shit. He's like, I don't fucking need this.
Yeah.
I'm an actor. Let me do my
thing. Just say.
He told him that if the vomit was going to hit him on the chest and it hit him in the face instead, which was porridge made to look like pea soup.
Mm-hmm. I love porridge.
He slapped the actor who plays Father Dyer at the end before he gave him the last rites because he said he wasn't getting an emotional enough performance out of him. William Friedkin's not a cool guy. Really, real fucked up dude.
No. You did that to me before this record.
That's true, and it's not working. So
I'm emotional.
And he didn't shy away from it in interviews. He's like, I slapped
that guy. I slapped that guy. I thought I needed to do it. Yeah. But then he also...
It's not funny.
I slapped that fucking guy. Yeah. He wasn't crying.
Yeah.
William Peter Blatty...
Will Smith directed this.
William Peter Blatty started out learning a lot about the Jesuits when he was younger. And the person he learned a lot of it from was a man called Thomas Birmingham. Mm. Thomas Birmingham plays... The really iconic looking head of the university, you guys know, with the really high forehead and the grey hair that is talking to Jason Miller or talking to Demi when they're at the bar.
Oh, yeah.
That guy who looks incredible is not an actor. That's just the guy who taught William Peter Blatty everything he knows about religion. And when he finally wrote the book, he was like, will you be in my film, please? Because I think you'll be great in this role. He kills it. He's so good. He's got such a good face. Wow. And he allegedly, things kept happening on the set where family members were dying. People were getting really injured. Max von Sydow had to leave early on because I think his father or someone might have died. Like all these terrible things were happening. Jason Miller's son almost died in a motorcycle crash. Mm. And there was a bird that flew into some of the circuit breakers. All these terrible things kept happening. Mm. And so William Friedkin asked Thomas Birmingham, who was their basically like consultant on the set, like, hey, would you bless the set and bless the crew just because we're a little worried? Mm. And Thomas Birmingham was like, I think that's going to do more harm than good, man. Like, people are going to freak out. We're already doing a movie about demonic possession. I'll tell you what. I'll just say you're all in my prayers tonight. Next day, one of the sets burnt down. And he came in and was like, I'll do a blessing over the set. Feels like maybe it could use actually some of God's love.
It's such an incredible read to look on.
Insane. Now, some people do say that William Friedkin exaggerated the degree to which it was cursed. When a film films for 12 months, shit's going to happen.
He's out there throwing birds into
circus. I mean, yeah, that's
and,
it. He's like... Yeah.
And lighting the set
he's
on fire.
I don't know what happened. Someone fired a gun. The set fell apart.
He's still holding the jerry can. He's like, I don't know. Yeah, someone got shot in the leg. I don't
you
know
gotta slap it. Some people sometimes. Come on.
Yeah, like, pistol whip.
But a lot of stuff going on there. You know, I think...
So do you guys believe in demonic possession? Do you think that could happen to you? Is that why, like, do you think people believe in it and that's why it's scary?
Yes. And I think that the degree to which people can believe
Marcus
in things,
doesn't believe. Marcus
no,
doesn't believe.
No, I just think, it. Of course people believe in it, I think, because, you know, and I don't want to touch too heavily on this, but, if, you know...
I believe in it growing up.
People believe in religion.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
This is the worst consequence.
One is... in reinforcing positive values, and one is well,
they rule you by fear. Yeah. That's the whole thing.
It's the like yin and yang of the conversation. So, sure. Yeah, of course, people believe in otherworldly spirits and possession and all the nasty, creepy critters in the shadows, you know, like.
Yeah.
And it's easy to buy into it. It is super easy to buy into it. And it's such a great genre as well to explore. And mind you, done to death now.
Well, yeah,
I can't watch another exorcism film. Like you've seen one, you've seen them all now.
Yeah. I did like the exorcism in Constantine. I know that's a different thing, but where they get the demon in the mirror, that's cool.
That movie's rules.
It's only interesting now when
that movie's
rules. You heard it here first.
Now, Talk to Me very recently did a
great call.
A very fresh take on. Hit him if you want.
No, I was going to go hold his head.
But Talk to Me did a very fresh take on the possession genre.
I agree. With a different thematic concern as well.
Was it more just like an interview format with the demon?
It was Talking Heads style.
Like if he was asking the question sincerely, I would answer it sincerely. But
it's more an addiction narrative or a narrative to do with like experimentation as adolescents. Regardless, The Exorcist, I think, is a very powerful film thematically to look at when you go that the people in the world of this movie who really don't want it to be a demon or don't want it to be demonic, are the most frustrating people in it. And it's really compelling and interesting that when Dimmy goes to beyond the head of the university, I mean, whoever's maybe the head of the chapter of that church or whatever, and then the next scene is him and Thomas Birmingham just being like, well, okay, we better get someone in here to deal with this because it seems like a demonic possession. And they just go with it. They're straight away just like, yeah, there's evil let loose in the world and we need to contain it. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And all the doctors are like, no, there's a perfectly reasonable explanation for this. And there's not. There's not. I don't think that necessarily.
But that's what would happen if you presented with these symptoms.
Of course.
They're of course going to assume mental illness or illness of some kind.
It's why it's an effective story because you go, yeah, well, of course, in real life, no doctor would go, well, this could be this. And you hear the hesitation in his voice, that doctor who's like, I mean, you could get an exorcist, guess if you want, but it is a compelling narrative because the notion of evil that people think they can recognize and diagnose and treat with the modern amenities and the things we've developed in the world and the arrogance of that I find very interesting where they're like, yeah, we have doctors, we've got psychiatry now, we've got angiographs, we've got these things we can deal with, we can go into Vietnam and we can fix things, you know, we're America, fucking hoorah. And then it's like, man, there's a spiritual decay here that you are not analyzing properly, and it is going to continue to erode away. I think that shit's fascinating. But anyway, sorry. I know we were saying earlier we should do MVP. Yeah, so ages ago. I'm sorry. I really like this movie.
It. No, it's interesting, Tom. It's good that you're talking a lot. I like it. Let's keep it going. MVP.
Linda Blair. Maybe followed pretty closely by Jason Miller.
I was going to say Jason Miller.
Jason Miller's excellent. Future Jacob Elordi.
Oh, yeah.
That's my take. Yeah, that's Jacob Elordi in like 30 years.
No, Jason Miller's a better actor. I think Ellen Burstyn.
Ellen Burstyn.
Burstyn.
With joy.
No, with fear.
Yeah.
She, I mean, Linda Blair, but I feel like it's a strange performance, whereas Ellen Burstyn is like more of an acting, like a realistic acting challenge, you know? Linda Blair is kind of like just messing around and throwing herself around. Obviously, that's not fun, but Ellen Burstyn, yeah, MVP.
Depends what you're taking into account here, like who's been through what, who is putting in more work. I think on a technical scale, yeah, it's Ellen. Like I think that, and the actor?
Linda Blair.
No. Jason Miller. I think it's him.
Yeah, I mean, he's very good.
But there's a scene where he's going through the psych ward and he's locked his mum up in it.
That's heartbreaking.
It's just horrid. I don't know. I think he got a lot more to do in a weird way. I think
the closing act of the film is his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you sort of finish and you go, wow, he was great.
But whereas Ellen's consistently very strong throughout and the progression and the build. I don't know. It's tough. I honestly don't know.
Three-way tie.
Oh, no, I would say two-way tie.
I'm
not giving it to Linda.
He's got a wryness to him that no one else gets. I mean, one of my favorite things about the movie is that conversation with him and Thomas Birmingham in the bar, which is not the character's name, but that's the actor's name and I remember it, is when it's almost like he's being coded like a detective.
Sorry, he does play Tom.
He just plays That's Tom. Excellent. He's being coded or played like a detective, or he's like, I can't do this anymore. You got to get someone else. You know, you're the best we've got, sort of thing. Like, he's trying to retire and they won't let him, you know. And you're like, what is this guy's job? Oh, he's a psychiatrist to priests, which makes sense that he'd be losing his faith in a world that feels as if it's losing its morals. But I like that he's kind of funny sometimes. Yeah. I love when he sits down with Linda and the drawer opens and he goes, did you do that? Pushes it closed. Do it again. In time. No, do it again. Like, yeah. He's kind of playing with her a little
pushing,
bit.
Yeah,
he's like, buttons. I don't believe this shit. And so I'll let you play it out as long as you want, but I'm not buying into this. Yeah. And I love the way he plays that.
At what point does he believe?
When he's in there with Max von Sydow and the bed raises up and he's not responding. What about he's like, that? The response, Damien.
Hey, Frank, how did you go with the scene where she levitates and floats and it's really still, like she's planking and moving up so slowly?
Yeah, I hated it.
That's a tense moment, actually. Out of all the gimmicky moments of her being possessed and acting out, that one I think is
the moments of stillness.
Yeah, I think that's the scariest.
Just the tension hold on them continually, just saying the power of Christ compels you,
and you think, and it goes and goes.
Yeah, you think it's going to stop, and they keep going.
They keep going.
It feels like a 5-minute scene,
and you think, oh, that's the exorcism done.
He's like, I guess we win. Let's take a break.
And then we'll
start again.
I want to do it again.
And yeah. One of the scenes that was cut from the theatrical version that's so heartbreaking, again, which is just a great like buzzword or catch-all for this movie, is when Von Sydow and Jason Miller are out there and he's like, why would the demon do this to a little girl? And he says, I think it's to make us despair, to make us feel animal and ugly, to make us feel like we could be rejected and that God doesn't love us.
It's picking on the weak.
My God.
It's taking the most defenseless thing you can and brutalizing it.
It's so upsetting.
It's horrendous. What about when Sado's doing the thing? He's halfway through it. He's looking at Miller and he's like, that's your line.
Yeah, that's it. That's what he believes. But he's like, the response, Damien.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Apparently the way they got her levitating is in film in the day, they could remove the wires in post, but it looked a little obvious. They painted the wires to match the background of the set.
That's
but because
crazy.
They kept wanting to move the camera, they had to basically do it frame by frame and continually repaint the wires. So that's why you can't see the wires, because Friedkin just insisted that they do
so
that.
So tedious, but incredible.
He's insane. He's an insane person. This is an astounding film that I'll love for the rest of my life.
I'm exhausted. Can we finish?
Yeah.
it's awful.
A lot.
Frank, are you better for it?
No.
Hang on. You regret watching The Exorcist?
No, because it's one of the greatest films of all time and it's iconic. Like, I'm glad to have seen it.
Line.
It is. It's stood the test of time. It's laid the groundwork for every horror film to come afterwards.
I that's a big line from you.
Yes.
But I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong.
No.
Oh. You're not wrong.
I think anyone could come to me and say this is one of their top 10 movies. I'd be like, totally makes sense. It's The Exorcist. Mm. So not throwing anything in.
I can't go higher. If anything, after listening and revisiting it, I would go lower, but I don't want to because the film is good. But I feel like shit.
Yeah.
I feel like Linda Blair.
We've
like,
taken 5 years off his life with this conversation.
Honestly, look at me.
He looks worn.
Look at me.
Look at him. Can you imagine? They once cast him as Figaro in Wicked.
Figaro.
Can't remember the character's name already.
Is anyone else throwing anything in?
I'm going to give it a 9.
Hey!
Oh! Nice. Yeah.
I'll start at 10.
Oh, beautiful film. That's cool. I'm glad that's over.
Mm.
I'm glad I chose it.
I'm glad you chose it.
I feel how you feel. I feel that way watching it every time, and I'm like, it's weird I like this feeling, but I do. But
you're going to go nice and fluffy on the next choice, aren't you?
Please, God.
Can we get a fluffer in here?
What's a fluffer, Tom? A fluffer?
What are the rules anymore?
It's for the dick. Throw in the pal.
Come on, man. Thanks for listening to Throwing the Power. My name is Frank.
My name's Marcus.
My name's Tom.
That was The Exorcist.
And
yay.
That was for the dick.
For the dick.
Stop saying it.
What, dick?
The power of Christ compels your dick. Send us an Instagram, throwingthepal@instagram or throwingthepal@gmail.com.
The power of Tom compels you.